Good morning. I'm Gary Gramling, Chairman of the San Diego Housing Commission, and I'm calling this meeting to order. Not only the regularly scheduled meeting, but the specially announced special meeting for this morning. Both meetings are hereby called to order at 9:10 a.m. Members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must complete a speaker request form. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes each. Collective testimony by those who support or oppose an item shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes total per side. Non-agenda public comments are heard at the beginning of each meeting. Those who wish to address the board about a topic that is not on the agenda must fill out a white speaker request form. They can be obtained back there. The speaker request form must be turned in to Angie over here in the corner. Members of the public may also request to have an item pulled from the consent agenda once that is proposed by submitting a speaker request form, which will also be obtained back there and handed in to Angie over here. To speak on a matter on the agenda, members of the public must complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording secretary before the item is called. Those who wish to speak in opposition to the item must complete the pink colored form, and those in favor of the item must complete the gold colored form. And as I previously announced, there's nothing politically sensitive about the choice of those colors, okay? Okay, so now we've done that. I have no non-agenda public request forms, so we'll move beyond that. Commissioners, any comments? Any of you? Okay. I'm just going to make a brief announcement, if you'll please. Sometime this Sunday, which is the 11th of September, a day of infamy as far as I'm concerned, if you'll take some time on Sunday to just reflect upon the atrocities that happened on that day in 2001, and also to maybe say a prayer that we don't have to experience something like that again in the future. So that's my comment. Now, report by the President and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Gentry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a few very brief remarks. It's hard to believe that's been 15 years. Some positive occurrences, at least I think they are. The first is last month I was elected chair of the Regional Continuum of Care Council on the Homeless for San Diego County and City. And your condolences are accepted for that. I'm following behind Todd Gloria, which is a tough role to play. And this is a board of something just over 30 people representing government, private sector, providers, academia, the like, which has a specific function of allocating the specific set of resources that come in from HUD each year for homelessness services. And lately it's been in the neighborhood of some $16 million per year, some of which comes to the housing agency, most of which does not. And this is for the whole region, which means San Diego County. So that should be an interesting addition to my duties. I will be sure and keep you abreast of how that plays out as we go forward. All kidding aside, I am pleased with it, and I think that it represents a reflection not just of me, but of this housing commission and the way that we have incrementally increased our presence in the homelessness agenda community. San Diego for the past few years. So any ideas that the board might have as we go forward on this, certainly I'd love to hear from you on them. In that regard, there's an information package in front of you, and one of the documents is a letter that is under the banner of the Regional Continuum of Care that I have signed. And this is a letter that's going to HUD relative to something that you all have seen a lot of publicity and comment on over the past year or two. And that is that the formula that the feds use to allocate the continuum of funding nationwide has not been materially changed in about 40 years. And needless to say, it's not kept up well for those cities that experience homelessness, in some cases, in the worst case, and that is San Diego's example. We right now have, as measured by the annual January count, the fourth worst problem in the country, and that's not per capita, that's in whole numbers, behind New York City, Los Angeles, and Seattle, just ahead of Las Vegas. And in particular, the West Coast coastal cities tend to be have the worst problems as well. Our funding over the past few years has ranged anywhere from 18th to about 22nd. So the formula is based on criteria that came out of the Housing Act of 1974, literally, and conditions have changed since then. HUD, a couple, 3 years ago, published proposed revisions, then nothing came of it. Then doing it again this year, we hope this year something will come of it. And the continuum of care has gone on record as making a specific recommendation, and we will see where it goes. I know that this is also going to be a topic of concern for the Chamber of Commerce for San Diego in the annual visit to Washington the last week of this month. So that's just for your information, and I'll be sure and keep you apprised on how this effort goes over the next year or two. And before I move on, any comments or questions at all about the regional continuum?
Other than it's kind of like hurting cats.
It is hurting cats. It certainly is, but it's not something I haven't had experience doing before, so we'll see how it plays out. A different item, also good news. Article 34, you all remember, is Article 34 of the state constitution, which requires that all housing agencies in the state get authority from or approval from the voters on the maximum ceiling of production that those agencies can produce. We believe that we will be at or above our currently authorized ceiling before the next general four-year election in 2020. So we have taken action to get on the ballot for November this year. It will be called Measure M, which tells you at least how many we know for sure will be on the ballot. It will be just before Measure N, which is the pot legalization, so we should keep some attention for the voters. This would increase our capacity to some 38,680 affordable housing rental units needed to be produced in the city of San Diego, which dovetails in exactly with what SANDAG has said in their research that the city needs to produce. Council member Todd Gloria is the designated leader on this on the city council level, and his office has prepared the ballot argument in favor of Measure M, and that was submitted to the city clerk's office on August 25th, and we feel very good about who's lined up on the record endorsing this. And they include not only Todd, but also Mayor Faulkner, Jean Brown, who is president of the League of Women Voters, president and CEO of the San Diego County Taxpayers Association, Haney Hong, and San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce Executive VP and COO, Amy Fawcett. Additional supporters include Wakeland Housing and Development Corporation, National Corps, Affirmed Housing, Chelsea Investment Corporation, Building Owners and Managers Association International San Diego, the San Diego Housing Federation, and the San Diego chapter of the Commercial Real Estate Development Association. So we've gotten, I think, the full range of the political spectrum supporting this, and that makes me feel real good, is from the far right to the far left and everything in between. Any questions on that at all? A particular piece of good news is that the grand reopening of the Hotel Churchill is scheduled for September 19th at 10 in the morning. And as you recall, Hotel Churchill, you look right out the window, you see it. It looks wonderful. If you've not had a chance to go through it yet, it's just a gorgeous property. I'm That's going to be a showpiece for us. I'm very pleased and proud of it. 72 furnished permanent affordable housing studios for homeless individuals, including veterans, transitional age youth, and adults exiting the correction system. The certificate of occupancy was issued on August the 1st, and we've got most of the residents moved in already. It should be a good show that day. One final comment. As you all remember, I was asked to provide some testimony before a House Housing Subcommittee back in May. Well, I was asked last month to provide some testimony before a Senate Housing Appropriations Subcommittee next week. So I'll be doing a whistle stop back and forth to D.C. next week. But again, I think this reflects not just me, not just Rick, but it reflects this agency and the high regard that we're held in, that we're getting some recognition nationally and being asked to provide advice to what we think national policy should be for affordable housing. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to propose that two items be moved from the regular agenda over to the consent agenda. Those items are item 100 and 101. That's my proposal. Commissioner Moraga has moved to approve. Commissioner Davis has seconded that. Any discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the consent agenda, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The consent agenda is approved. Okay. Next, we'll have the approval of the minutes, July 29th regular meeting. You've all had a chance to review those. Are there any requested changes? Seeing no indication of such, is there a motion for approval? Commissioner Hubbard has moved approval. Is there a second? Commissioner Davis has moved seconded the motion. All in favor say aye. Opposed? And it is approved. We'll go now to item 102, Coronado Terrace.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Ted Miyahara, Director of Housing Finance. With me is Cameron Shariati, Real Estate Project Manager. I was happy to see that the previous item, Vista Terrace Hills, was on today's consent agenda. A lot of time and effort goes into getting our bond items to the point of bringing them forward to the board for recommendation. Staff really enjoys bringing forward bond items and sharing the great things we are doing. For the record, the one thing we enjoy more than talking about our projects is seeing them on the consent agenda. I do, however, want to circle back to the Vista Terrace.
Let me interrupt you. The reason this one is not yet on the consent agenda, I hope, is that this is the preliminary discussion. And if you do a great job, we'll hopefully move it to the consent agenda in a future meeting.
Eden probably has their fingers crossed right now.
Okay.
I do, however, want to circle back to the Vista Terrace Hills item for just a minute because it's directly related to the Coronado Terrace item. The board raised some really good points when we brought forward the preliminary bond items for Vista Terrace Hills, and the board asked Eden to consider providing some additional concessions to the project and other developments here in the city of San Diego. Linda Mendolini and her team at Eden did just that, and they have committed to restricting 10% of the units at Coronado Terrace to 30% AMI, contributing $100,000 in annual cash flow to tenant services, and also contributing a minimum of $5 million of sales proceeds to future developments. The $5 million that they committed is going to go into Coronado Terrace as a permanent financing source. As it stands today, Eden will likely contribute up to $6 million in capital funding to fill funding shortfalls necessary to rehab Coronado Terrace. Eden is a nonprofit that is committed to their mission. I think that the San Diego market is something that Eden wants to tap into. I personally believe that Eden is acting in good faith by demonstrating to the board that they take your feedback seriously, and here's why. They also plan to restrict 10% of the project units at Coronado to 30% AMI. They also plan on contributing $100,000 in annual cash flow to tenant services. And in addition to the $5 to $6 million in financing they've committed, they're also going to carry back a seller note in the approximate amount of $6.2 million in order to complete a comprehensive rehab to ensure that the project is sustainable long term. I would consider Coronado Terrace a thin deal in terms of financial upside because it's going to take $13.6 million in soft funding in order to pencil. In addition to the $13.6 million in soft financing, they'll also be deferring $9.3 million per the TCAC regulations. And as a side note, I think this is a good example of what TCAC intended with their recent developer fee changes. One of TCAC's policy objectives was to create additional financing sources for deals that could really use them. The increased developer fee generates approximately $4.5 million in tax credit equity, which will be used to fund capital improvements. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Cameron for the project specifics.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chair Gramling, and Mr. Gentry. Item 102 is a request for a recommendation that the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $97 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds for the development of Coronado Terrace, authorize application submittals to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee for a bond allocation, approve the selected financing team, and that the Housing Authority authorize the President and CEO of the Housing Commission to execute and perform acts as appropriate to implement upon advice of General Counsel and or Bond Counsel. In addition, staff requests that City Council hold a Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act public hearing and adopt a resolution approving the issuance of multifamily housing revenue bonds. The proposed project is an existing 312-unit multifamily development located at 1151 25th Street in the San Ysidro Community Plan Area within Council District 8. This is very close to the prior project that Ted was discussing, Vista Terrace Hills. The development consists of 17 Type 5 walk-up wood frame and stucco apartment buildings. Coronado Terrace includes 268 two-bedroom units and 44 three-bedroom units. Current amenities include a leasing office, laundry facilities, a community center, and a residential services building. Coronado Terrace was constructed in 1971 and was most recently rehabilitated in 2001. However, the property is showing signs of aging and requires rehabilitation to meet current capital needs. The scope of the proposed rehabilitation includes comprehensive improvements to unit interiors and common areas, as well as improvements to building electrical, plumbing, and mechanical systems. The full scope of work, including a list of specific green measures, is included as Attachment 3 in the staff report. The developer of the project is Eden Housing, and during the 15-year tax credit compliance period, the project will be owned by a limited partnership comprised of an affiliate of Eden acting as the sole general partner and a to-be-selected investor limited partner. The total development cost for this project will be approximately $117 million, which comes to approximately $375,000 per unit. Sources of funding include 4% tax credits, tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds, a seller carryback note of approximately $1.5 million, a contribution from Eden Housing of approximately between $5 to $6 million, $6 million within the most recent projections, accrued interest during construction, income from operations, and a deferred developer fee of $9.3 million. The developer is requesting the issuance of bonds in the amount of up to $97 million, and there is no Housing Commission funding proposed for this project. Under the proposed financing, as Ted mentioned, Eden has agreed to restrict 10% of the units at households at or below 30% of area median income. 80% of the units will be restricted to households at or below 50% of area median income, and the remaining 10% will be restricted to households at or below 60% of area median income. Approval of the bond inducement and TEFRA resolutions does not commit the Housing Authority to issue bonds, and the bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the housing authority, or the housing commission because security for the repayment of the bonds will be limited to specific private revenue sources of the project. The requested actions are preliminary steps to issue bonds, and the project will be brought forward for final approval in January of 2017. The developer expects to close financing and begin rehabilitation work shortly thereafter and complete the project sometime in early 2018. This concludes staff's presentation, and we also have Mike Rogers and Linda Mandolini here on behalf of Eden Housing, as well as the president and CEO of National Neighborhood House. Excuse me. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions at this point?
I appreciate the context from the Vista Hill project to this one, so thank you for that.
I'm shocked at the acquisition cost, only as a reflection of what has happened in our economy regarding housing in general in the last, well, since the crash of 2008-2009. The idea that you've got a building there that you've got to pay $225,000 a unit for, and yet it will still pencil out because of what has happened to the disproportionate for sale housing and for rent housing, and the ever increasing need for assisted affordable housing. It's shocking. I also don't have any questions regarding the project as a whole. I think the presentation, the written presentation, helped us get through that easily. And we know the partner, or we know the developer, and we'll look forward to seeing seeing it go forward. So at that point, I'll take a motion. Commissioner Moraga has moved approval of the package as submitted. Is that a tie?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Hubbard has seconded the motion. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll move the question. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Gosh, and you traveled all the way over here to speak and didn't have to. Congratulations. You'd like to speak anyhow? Okay. We've got time for you.
Linda Mandolini, President of Eden Housing. I want to thank the staff, and I would actually like to thank the commission. You raised for us in this process a lot of questions that we wanted to grapple with, not the least of which is how do you make room for people to advance from affordable housing to something else? So as part of our process, we've partnered with Neighborhood House Association to help create a program where we focus on things like literacy, which were raised at our first hearing, homeownership, and financial literacy, because we, like you, are really committed to this. So we hope that on both of these projects we can really create some national partnerships and really set an example for other places in the country on Section 8 housing. So I want to just thank you all. We really appreciate the thoughtful way that you approached this.
Thank you. Mr. Gentry?
Just a comment to echo that. Linda and I have known each other for some time. We sit on a statewide advocacy board together. And I think Eden Housing and Linda Mandolini represent the best of the best who we deal with. And we're very glad to have you in town. Thank you.
And I thank you as well. All right. Unfortunately, Ted, you're going to have to just step down. Next, we'll move to item 103, the strategic plan.
He did this on purpose. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. Jeff Davis, Chief of Staff, and with me is Debbie Ruane, our Chief Strategy Officer. We are before you today to request approval for the proposed 2016 to 2020 strategic plan. Every strategic planning process begins with the mission of the organization, and ours is to provide affordable, safe, and quality homes for low-income and moderate-income families and individuals in the city of San Diego, and to provide opportunities to improve the quality of life for the families that we serve. The new plan builds upon the success of the last plan. It consists of 3 overriding goals and 14 key objectives. The 4-year time frame for this ambitious plan will allow us for a longer-term outlook and allow us to complete multifaceted projects. With this plan, there will be robust measurements and tracking, and there will be mechanisms that we create that will track specific metrics for each of the goals and objectives that can be reported out to you. This plan is considered to be a living document. So as our environment changes, whether that be our financial or political or otherwise environments, we will come to you with recommended adjustments for your approval.
During the last year of the prior strategic planning process, we knew we wanted to begin planning the next one to refocus our efforts and continue our work. To begin the process in December 2015, we completed an evaluation of the 2014 to 2016 plan to find areas where we still needed to make the most impact. We met with the Strategic Plan Subcommittee in March, June, and July in public special meetings to receive direction and gather feedback along the way. The subcommittee is chaired by Commissioner Moraga and includes Commissioners Gramling, Spoon, Hubbard, and Ertassen. We received significant contributions and direction from the subcommittee, and we were able to use those meetings as working sessions to adjust and enhance the goals and objectives and receive agreement on those changes. And we sincerely thank the input, direction, and support we received from the subcommittee.
We're proud of the agency-wide involvement and collaboration reflected in this plan. It started with an agency-wide survey designed to gather staff's input on their experience with our previous plan, as well as to collect ideas and goals and objectives for this one. The results were very encouraging, as we found very high engagement among our staff, and we also found that there was a great deal of alignment between the board subcommittee and our staff at large. For example, the top 4 areas of focus the staff identified were improving and optimizing the agency, increasing affordable housing, creating new programs, and identifying new partners and resources. After the survey and a second meeting with the board subcommittee, we worked with a core group of approximately 35 staff members from a variety of positions and departments to craft the objectives. A total of 8 meetings were held with the full group and many others held with subgroups. And then finally, we had an all-employee meeting held in June that ensured that we heard the voices of all staff concerning the strategy and direction for our agency.
The culmination of this process resulted in this strategic plan, which we'll now review with you. This slide displays the 3 strategic goals on which we'll focus for the next 4 years. They are, 1, maximize resources through operational efficiencies and technological innovations. 2, increase the number of affordable housing opportunities that serve low-income and homeless individuals and families in the city of San Diego. And 3, advocate for more affordable housing policies and resources.
So our first goal, again, is to maximize resources through operational efficiencies and technological innovations. This first goal contains 7 separate objectives, and all designed to work together to fully achieve this goal. Optimization is something we heard very clearly from the board subcommittee, and then we also heard it from our staff as well. Not surprising, given how crucial it is that we maximize our limited resources that we have to provide service to as many low-income families and individuals and as quickly and efficiently as possible. Our first objective is to enhance customer service and increase operational efficiencies by the expansion of the use of technology. There are many ways within the agency that we plan to do this, using web-based tools to create interactive portals and enhancing our reporting capabilities and other similar activities. Our second objective, we're going to dig deep and identify a minimum of 3 significant agency processes and increase efficiencies by an average of no less than 15%. While we are always continually making improvements in departmental processes and operations, this goal is different in that it will be an agency-wide, all hands on deck, if you will, effort, and it will be to tackle processes that have a broad impact on the agency. Our third objective, to create and implement a robust Housing Commission employee development plan to ensure that our business has continuity and personal growth opportunities for staff. We're excited about this objective and very enthusiastic, and we expect that well within the next year, we will have created a program that will provide greater internal capacity and tools to retain our talented staff. You've heard Rick say many times that our staff are our greatest resource, and we want to make sure that they are given the opportunity to grow and achieve their personal best while here at the agency, while providing the agency with the stability to continue to prosper in the future. Our fourth objective, we will prioritize the capital needs of our real estate portfolio. This objective will be achieved by confirming and prioritizing the capital needs of our portfolio according to the necessity and available funding and performing the repairs according to that analysis. Our fifth, conduct an analysis of the current real estate portfolio and provide a recommended optimization plan and an implementation plan. Completing this analysis and plan will allow the Housing Commission to reposition our real estate portfolio in a way that makes the most of our resources and our properties, thus helping as many families as possible. Our sixth objective is to decrease the average number of days vacant for SCHC-owned units by at least 20%. Again, this will allow us to serve more families and serve them better. And lastly, to enhance and adjust existing policy in order to maximize capacity in our homeless programs through the tracking and assessment and incentivizing of strong performance. And this objective is designed to encourage our homeless partners to operate more effectively and to reach and exceed goals determined. Where performance is weak, funding will be reallocated to higher performers, again, serving the most families as possible.
Goal 2 centers on a core reason the Housing Commission exists, which is to provide low-income families and individuals with housing opportunities. These objectives include creating 2,000 units of mixed income and affordable housing. This will be accomplished through bond and lending partnerships, development, and acquisition. Secondly, increase the voucher utilization rate to 102%. As a moving to work agency, we have more flexibility with our funding than do other non-moving to work PHAs. One of the ways we can flex those resources is by allowing more families to utilize rental housing subsidies than HUD requires, using federal funding more efficiently. Third, increasing the earned income of the Housing Commission's Achievement Academy participants by 15%. Part of our mission is to provide opportunities to improve the quality of life for our families. This is at the core of everything the Housing Commission's Achievement Academy does. New Academy programs and partnerships are planned to reach this objective. 4, provide housing opportunities for up to 350 individuals and families through expansions in rapid rehousing and permanent supportive housing. In essence, there are plans to expand our rapid rehousing program as well as create new and/or expanding the existing permanent supportive housing programs. Goal 3, the final goal centers on the need for housing advocacy. There are many different aspects pertaining to advocacy. The Housing Commission wishes to work toward impacting housing policy and increasing resources at the federal, state, and local levels. We're committed to work together with local lawmakers, other public housing agencies, and our partners to accomplish this goal. The first objective is to enhance our engagement and leadership role among stakeholders to expand our influence on policy decisions that are consistent with our mission. This will be accomplished through broader exposure in policy committees for homelessness, moving to work, and real estate. The second objective is to expand agency-wide private and government funding sources, such as the Foundation Fund, Pooled Investment Fund, grants, and the Reinvestment Task Force, by $50 million over the next 4 years. Decreasing our reliance on federal dollars is always something we strive to do. There are many exciting new avenues to explore in this vein, from discovering and applying for new grants, such as the Kellogg Grant, which we recently won, to utilizing our new San Diego Housing Commission Foundation Fund. We aim to increase the amount of resources we have to do our good work. Third, collaborate with partners to serve at least 4 additional homeless population groups, such as victims of domestic violence, child welfare, youth anti-recidivism, and families with school-aged children. There are opportunities to work with underserved homeless populations here in San Diego, and the Housing Commission strives to be a leader in fostering those new partnerships.
In conclusion, we ask that you approve our 2016-2020 strategic plan before you, which we propose to go into effect on October 1st, 2016. We plan to provide the board with comprehensive annual updates on our progress, and these updates will include data-driven metrics that measure our success. This completes our presentation. Again, we want to thank you sincerely for your support and for the substantial direction and guidance you gave us in creating this plan.
Mr. Moraga.
I just wanted to thank the staff and everyone involved for the process. You guys have done a tremendous amount of work on this, and just seeing the growth from the first time we embarked on this and the first plan to this one, to really be able to distill it down to our priorities to help reinforce our mission was really impressive. So thank you to everyone involved. It was a great process.
And I'm going to say that the accomplishment of Goal 3, at least in making progress in it in this next year, is going to be a little bit more challenging in that regardless of who wins the presidential election, there's going to be significant turnover in HUD and other agencies that impact us in Washington just by tradition. Doesn't matter who wins. If one party wins, all resignation. Actually, I think by tradition, almost every secretary submits his or her resignation, even if their own party won. So reestablish, and that's, we're going to have that in Sacramento. We're going to have that in Washington. So the challenges are going to be to reach out and really try to reestablish or strengthen those bonds that we've already worked on that. So, and I agree with Commissioner Moraga. I know the amount of effort that goes into this, and this is, again, a significant improvement. And I like it because this was something I got exposed to in this agency almost day one, the need to make this kind of a plan happen. So thank you very much. I'm going to move also to your goal one and make an announcement, and that is that almost 8 years ago, well, in fact, 8 years ago, we sent out our board packets to the commissioners on the board by hand-delivered courier packets, okay? And we would get very expensive packets, hard paper packets of materials. Well, the board packets no longer go out to the commissioners. That way they go out electronically. And I've had discussions with Mr. Gentry about that, and I'm now making a public announcement, and that is that within the next few months, we're going to electronically present the board packets at the board meeting so that there'll be an iPad or a laptop here at the desk in front of each commissioner, and we won't go through the tremendous time and cost of copying all of these. There will be a hard copy available still in these future meetings so that anyone in the audience who needs to refer to something may be able to do so, but we're long overdue to make that additional conversion. And Mr. Gentry has committed that this is going to happen quickly. And then he gets to point to someone else who's going to carry that instruction out on that. So anyhow, I just wanted to let you know, we're not going to be thumbing back and forth through pages of material much longer. All right. Commissioner Hubbard?
I just wanted to echo what been said. This is my first time being on the Strategic Planning Committee, so I was not a part of the last one, but to see the process and everything that goes into it, to just witness it in the discussions and everything is amazing to see everything that goes, all the hard work. So I wanted to thank staff and everyone who was involved in that. Great job.
Now that we've been saying all these wonderful words, it's time for us to continue our assignment, and that is, do I have a motion regarding the strategic plan? Commissioner Davis has moved approval of the strategic plan. Is there a second? Commissioner Hubbard has seconded that motion. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of approving the strategic plan as submitted, indicate by saying aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. Job well done. Next is item 104. You're going to move from one side to the middle. Please proceed.
I am. Good morning, commissioners. As you know, we have been working with the Office of the City Auditor as they performed an audit of the San Diego Housing Commission, particularly focused on the real estate division, but by all means not exclusive. The intent of the audit was to address concerns raised by City Council regarding the efficiency and effectiveness of the Housing Commission's efforts to produce affordable housing. This morning I'm going to update you on Phase 1, which was specifically focused on the Affordable Housing Fund, and the results were presented to the City Council Audit Committee in July, and I've shared those with you verbally last month. The City Auditor reviewed a sample of transactions where the Housing Commission worked with the City's Development Services Department and the Facilities Financing Offices and included 17 residential developments that paid inclusionary fees and 26 transactions that paid linkage fees. During their review, the Auditor interviewed Housing Commission staff extensively. The City of San Diego's Development Services Department, the Facilities Financing Department, the Building Industry Association and developers who are associated with it, the Affordable Housing Coalition, and even the Chamber of Commerce. They also performed a deep dive into the City's Municipal Code, read through City and Housing Commission reports, policies and procedures, and even reviewed building plans for residential and commercial developments. The City Auditors were extremely thorough. You can imagine trying to come up to speed quickly on our world, especially linkage, inclusionary, affordable housing. It's no small task, and the auditors were actually fantastic to work with. Needless to say, we became very familiar with the auditors and their work, and for every 1 hour they spent, it was approximately 3 to 4 hours for Housing Commission staff, explaining and informing, producing documentation, answering their questions, often in groups because expertise is spread across the agency, but often one-on-one. Excerpts from this Phase 1 report contained this first paragraph: "The city prioritizes affordable housing and affordable housing services as essential to the city's long-term economic growth and prosperity. We were pleased to see this recognition and affirmation of the city's focus on housing." The auditors for the city recognized the importance of timely and accurate collections and expenditures of the Affordable Housing Fund, which is a very important financial vehicle that facilitates the creation of affordable housing in the city. As a reminder to the board, the Affordable Housing Fund is comprised of two permanent, annually renewable sources of revenue, inclusionary fees and linkage fees. The Housing Commission has received approximately $30 million over the last 3 years for investment into the creation of affordable housing, and this money comes from the fees levied by the city on residential and commercial and industrial developments in the city. The funds are then turned over to the Housing Commission, and we in turn invest them into the creation of affordable housing. The mechanics of the process is that the City of San Diego Development Services Department assesses and collects inclusionary fees. The Financing Facilities Department and the Housing Commission then allocate the fees into new affordable housing developments via the loans we bring to you for approval. The Housing Commission sets the fee through an analysis performed by Kaiser Marston. It's a very complicated fee, And it, I asked Ann to walk me through it this morning, but essentially it takes 50% of the difference between the median income price of single-family homes sold in the city and the amount of the income of median income family of four can pay for housing, multiplies that by 10%, then divides it by the average square footage of all the houses. So it's in the municipal code. It's complicated, and that's one of the reasons why we have Kaiser Marston help us collect it. We collect that information and submit it to the city. They upload it onto their website, and it's used for the developers to calculate their fees. And it's supposed to be on online available by July 1. As the auditors concluded this phase one, they made recommendations covering system controls, training, process improvements, and service level agreements. Of the eight recommendations made, only one was directly related to the San Diego Housing Commission, and that was that we work more closely with the Development Services Department to provide a more formalized transfer of this information from Kaiser Marston, so that the city can upload it by July 1. This hasn't always been the case. Sometimes a matter of days can result in thousands of dollars of lost revenue to the city, therefore lost money for the Housing Commission to invest in affordable housing. Recommendations for DSD included ongoing training, adjustments to their software controls, and consultation to ascertain whether or not fees that were either over or under assessed should be recouped or repaid. You can see these fees are nominal. This is highly detailed work that the auditors went into to come up with these numbers. It was quite an impressive process to watch. Recommendations for financing, facilities finance, was to assess the linkage fee after building plans are finalized. This is right now being done before, and often the building plans can change the square footage from the time they're first submitted to the time they're finalized. They also suggested that periodic review of assessments and, again, consultation with the city attorney's office. The Housing Commission was pleased to participate in this review into our practices and policies and methods. Process improvement is good, and this audit helped us define areas where we can work more closely with the city. Our role in affordable housing is seen as vital to the City of San Diego, and our relationship with DSD and Facilities Finance is critical as we streamline our processes. We're going to provide a review of Phase 2 next month, which has concluded. However, the information isn't public yet. I can share with you that the findings were equally supportive and will enable the Housing Commission to continue our excellent work. We've invited the auditors to join us next month as well at the board meeting. You may not have noticed them, but they've been sitting in board meetings periodically for the last 8 months or so and have seen, I think they've become mini experts in our world now, which has been gratifying for us and them. Lastly, I want to recognize all of the staff in the Housing Commission, rental assistance, communications, finance, business admin, real estate. The Housing Commission has spent thousands of hours on this audit, and we're glad to see it come to a culmination, and we look forward to sharing the results of Phase 2 with you next month.
Are any of the auditors present today?
They are not.
Oh, I was going to have them stand up. That way we would know who they were. Any questions, comments? No? Thank you very much for the Commissioner Moraga.
Excuse me if I missed this. How many phases are there? Are we?
There are just two. We actually thought it was going to be one report, and the auditors did something which was actually very kind. They took the analysis into the Affordable Housing Fund, which included the city, and made that its own separate phase. Therefore, Phase 2 is solely Housing Commission. There's no city offices. It's a much more comprehensive review into the real estate division and our asset management, property management, loan services divisions.
Thank you. Okay. In a sense, I'm going to go off agenda for just a second. At the very bottom of the published agenda for today's regularly scheduled meeting is an item saying County of San Diego, Item 079, 1,000 Homeless Veterans Initiative Progress Update. And rather than just having a paper presentation for us to read at our leisure, I've asked Jeff Davis to actually orally present a summary of that. Thank you.
Good morning again. My name is Jeff Davis. Chief of Staff with me is Melissa Peterman, our Vice President of Homeless Housing Innovations. We will be providing an update of our collaborative initiative to address veteran homelessness. In March of this year, the Housing Commission and the City of San Diego launched its partnership, the 1,000 Homeless Veterans Initiative. As you will recall, the initiative invests federal, city, and Housing Commission resources to provide housing in the city for veterans who are living on the streets or in shelters. With support from key stakeholders like San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner, City Council Member Todd Gloria, and San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Jerry Sanders, we have seen promising success of the initiative over the course of its first 6 months. Quickly, there are four program components of the 1,000 Homeless Veteran Initiative: landlord outreach, also known as Housing Our Heroes; rapid rehousing assistance; Veteran Affairs Supportive Housing Vouchers, or VASH vouchers; and Housing Commission sponsor-based rental subsidies. Under the Housing Our Heroes campaign, landlords who rent their units to homeless veterans are encouraged to participate using tools such as incentive payments for leasing up homeless veterans, a contingency fund for units damaged or unpaid rent, a designated Housing Commission landlord liaison, as well as security deposit and utility deposit assistance for the families themselves. So using these landlord incentives, along with our VASH vouchers, we have to date successfully leased 317 formerly homeless veterans. We have another 189 veterans who have been approved for rental subsidy or connected to a service provider and are in the search of locating a unit. Additional numbers include the 202 landlords that are currently participating in the initiative, and we have 541 units that have been committed. And we also have entered into partnerships with 14 service providers. We want you to know that we expect these numbers to grow in the near future, as these final two features of our initiative really begin to be fully executed, these being the rapid rehousing program and our sponsor-based subsidies. And I'm going to ask Melissa to provide you an update on those.
Good morning. Our rapid rehousing assistance prioritizes moving a veteran family or individual experiencing homelessness due to an unexpected life experience into permanent housing as quickly as possible through short-term financial assistance and case management. Through a notice of funding availability, the Housing Commission has identified and is awarding $1.9 million to three providers. And these awards include $467,250 to Alpha Project to serve approximately 50 veterans, $500,000 to St. Vincent de Paul Village to serve approximately 55 veterans, and $1 million to Veterans Village of San Diego to serve approximately 110 veterans. Under the fourth program component of the initiative, the Housing Commission is awarding 100 federal sponsor-based housing vouchers with funds for supportive services to two community partners, also through a notice of funding availability. We recently identified the partners, 40 vouchers with $437,500 in supportive services will be awarded to St. Vincent de Paul Village, and 60 vouchers with $637,500 in supportive services will be awarded to Veterans Village of San Diego. It is important to note this program element is designed to ensure all veterans experiencing homelessness have access to safe, affordable housing, and as a result, their discharge status is not part of the program's eligibility criteria.
So, in summary, we now have 317 homeless veterans permanently served, or permanently housed, I should say. And to give you an idea of what is upcoming, we have another 189 veterans with subsidy or a service provider who are in the process of looking for a unit. Additionally, as Melissa mentioned, we have recently awarded funds to partners committed to housing 215 homeless veterans through rapid rehousing and 100 more through the award of sponsor-based subsidies. And this gives us a total of 821 veterans housed or in the pipeline, if you will. In closing, I would like to further highlight the initiative's success, which is best captured by the story of one of the families served. Luis, a 20-year Navy veteran, and his wife lost their job and were evicted because they fell behind on their rent. The couple and their three children, ages 8, 17, and 20, became homeless and lived in their vehicle for 2 weeks and then moved on to hotel or motels. Luis and his family were assisted by the Housing Our Heroes Landlord Outreach Campaign. His family was the right match for a Housing Our Heroes landlord named Wallace Hickey, who wanted to help a veteran family. Now, with a roof over their heads, Luis, a former Navy cook, as well as his wife and eldest daughter, have found jobs. Luis said all he needed was this chance to get back on his feet. We appreciate the board's leadership and its support for this initiative and recognize the importance of addressing homeless veterans in the city of San Diego. And this concludes our update. We're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Mr. Gentry?
Just a comment to put this in context. This is another element of the Housing Commission's Housing for San Diego approach, which we kicked off formally in November of 2014. And this was an addition to it that we put in this past January. I'll point out that this program kicked off officially when we got the money in hand, which was March the 1st. So we're essentially halfway through it. I measure it, the success to date, not just by the individuals and families housed, but those who are approved and looking, because they will find a place. And that means we're right at 500, so we're on target to get this thing done, especially since we spent about the first 2 months getting it cranked up. We will look most likely to do some significant publicity on this with the mayor's office on or around Veterans Day, which would be entirely appropriate to point out progress. And I have no doubt that we'll achieve our goal by the end of February next year, and by which time we will have figured out what to do next.
I have a question and a comment, so we'll go with the question first. What percentage of the veterans, of these 317 veterans, are female?
I don't have that information offhand, but we can find out.
I was going to say, you will have it, right?
Yes.
Because they're every bit as important as the traditional veteran on that. My comment is that as a citizen, I don't believe that anybody in this country deserves to be homeless. But as a veteran, I believe that every veteran in this country who has either put their life on the line for our country or has been prepared and committed to do that if called to do so, deserves to be housed and deserves to be housed decently. And so this program is extremely important. Thank you. Next, that concludes the public portion of the regularly scheduled meeting.